there are some really interesting innovations being driven into the transportation sector right now around intelligent transportation, around new modes of transportation. And it's really speaking of new modes of transportation, I've got this giant truck driving by me right now. there are some really interesting innovations that are going on in government. And it was an exciting thing to be a part of, and I watch it very closely and get to work in it.
But, and I watched you get very, very excited about it. And it seems like some of these things really the government is doing in a way that the private sector would have. It's a longer term scale and vision than shows up on most private sector organizations' time frame.
That's right, Chris. And the advantage the government has is that they can actually lead in terms of some of these transformations. The all-up adoption is going to come, you know, through a partnership with the private sector, to be sure. But the innovation, the driving of innovation, is actually happening at the government level, and it's actually pretty effective. I look at things like the IntelliDrive program that we started when I was at RITA, and it's really going to transform the way vehicles move, the way people make transportation choices, whether they use public transit or whether they drive their own personal vehicles or ride their bikes or walk or what have you. But just because of what the way we can use the technology, the way we can apply it, the way we can gain situational awareness about the performance of the transportation system, it's really exciting stuff that's happening here. And it's really being led, the vision's being led by government, and that's a really interesting thing to see.
And you've also been in roles at DOD, where you've been responsible for, as the deputy CIO at DOD, been responsible for carrying out these innovative ideas using technology. I know that government wants to do it, and it seems like oftentimes the bad word bureaucracy sometimes gets in the way of actually being able to do this.
That's right, Chris. It's not a technology problem, as we all know. It's a cultural problem. The cultural adoption of these technologies across the enterprise is sometimes a very, very challenging thing. It has nothing to do with the technology, whether the technology is available to drive transformation and do really interesting and innovative things. It's the cultural buzzsaw or the regulatory buzzsaw that you run into when you actually try to go implement things. You know, something as simple as collaboration, for example, you know, the technology exists. It's been around for a while. You can definitely develop some robust collaboration capabilities for people in and out of government, but you run into some security policy issues, you run into the firewall issues, all legitimate things, but the culture tends to slow stuff down to the point where it makes implementation pretty challenging sometimes.
Well, and in fact, we're seeing that in parts of the IntelliPedia suite of tools where people are just sort of pulling back because is it that they just get nervous about the pace?
Yeah, and it's also the exception. You know, everybody's worried about security, and security seems to be the one thing where, you know, you can get bloodied up pretty seriously in the press if you have a security slip. So people are erring on the side of caution, I think, in some ways. It's legitimate to be concerned about this. But at the same time, you know, sometimes we're letting perfection be the enemy of the good, and we're not really looking at things from a business case perspective where we're understanding risk, assessing risk, and accepting a certain element of risk based on the reward that we can get through implementation.
And it sort of becomes that you can build the most secure system on the planet. Unfortunately, it's not connected to anything.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other alternative is, and I was actually speaking about this last night at a port security conference, is, you know, security has always been a challenge ever since we moved out of the caves. So, you know, securing our physical assets, securing our environment, has always been a challenge, and it's getting more so as we increase complexity in the information age, as we make much more data available. For example, port security. You know, you want to deploy a number of sensors to monitor everything from, you know, chemical release to nuclear, biological, radiological. You want to understand what the environment is around a port, both inside containers, outside containers, on containers, throughout that entire port. And what people are worried about is, you know, you make that kind of data available to the people who will use it for good. Are you also risking making that data available for people who will do bad? And a legitimate concern, but at the same time, it shouldn't stop you from really taking advantages of some of these systems that can enable you to really understand and respond to potential threats, or just have a better understanding of the operating conditions.
To use the famous Monty Python line, now for something completely different, although it's not completely different. You are very involved with something called the Churchill Center. And this is a educational philanthropy group that promotes the sort of ideas, teachings, leadership qualities of Winston Churchill. A number of events coming up over the next couple weeks, and I think they're actually related to government. Of course, Churchill being a government guy, talk a little bit about this organization and what's coming up over the next couple weeks.
Sure. Well, the Churchill Center is like you mentioned, educational philanthropy. What we want to achieve is to make sure that the memory and the deeds of Winston Churchill don't get lost to history. You know, Churchill was such an important figure in government, in publication, believe it or not, in art. He was a pretty amazing artist, actually, you know, truly a Renaissance guy. And if it wasn't for Winston Churchill, the world would look very differently right now, particularly if you think about the era of World War II and where Britain stood alone in 1939 and 1940 and most of 41 before the U.S. got into the war, you know, stood up against Hitler by himself. And you can imagine, had he not been successful, what the world would look like today. Even if the United States did enter the war, you know, had Britain been overrun during that period of time, you can't imagine how we would have launched D-Day. Where would we have launched D-Day from if we didn't have England? So, it's really important for all of us in the West and those who love democracy to really look at this man, understand the contributions that he made over his lifetime to freedom and democracy and liberty, and how he stood fast when others really didn't want him to. In fact, there were members in his war cabinet up until the time that the United States really entered the war that were urging him to negotiate with Hitler.
Yeah.
And he stood fast and also, if you think about British public opinion at that time, probably would have supported some form of so-called appeasement, simply because the memories of World War I were fresh, and they lost, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in the First World War. So he was incredibly brave, and it's important that we learn lessons from his life. And what the center does is it makes sure that there's a generation of teachers out there, high school teachers, elementary school teachers, middle school teachers, who are well versed on his deeds, his actions, his life, his publications, and all the contributions that he made to Western civilization and indeed to the world. And so that they can basically teach their students about Winston Churchill. And it's mostly focused in the United States and the United Kingdom, as one might expect, but it's expanding pretty significantly in the UK and in Europe and Australia right now, too.
And I remember watching that wonderful HBO film that they did, Into the Storm, and the amount of stress and strain of leading this charge on your own, even, as you said, sort of British public opinion, even not fully behind him. I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Right, but it was amazing what the man could do with his words.
Yeah.
And how he...
And even going back and reading him today, it's still phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely awe-inspiring. And he was able to use language in such a way to motivate a really weary public throughout the Blitz. And it was amazing that he was able to do that. A combination of his leadership and some very grievous strategic errors on the part of Hitler that really allowed us to enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today. Otherwise, the world would be a very, very different place.